From the hills of West Virginia to the high rises of Chicago. For over 30 years, Dan Frio has mastered the real estate market as one of the country's premier mortgage advisors. Dan is now sharing his experience and knowledge with the AM 560 audience. So sit back and learn how Dan has helped his clients manage the ups and downs of the real estate market across the country. Now, here's the host of the Mortgage Update, Dan Frio.
Welcome, folks. This is Dan Frio, and welcome back to the Mortgage Update with Dan Frio. I apologize if the sound is a little off. I'm actually recording this from home because the radio station wasn't letting anybody in the building. This week, what are we going to talk about? Well, the coronavirus is taking up all the news, so I have to go down that avenue. So let's talk about a few things here. The unemployment rate is at a record high. I wasn't shocked about it. I don't think you should be shocked about it either, because we know, I do a mortgage update every night. I do it on WYLL radio, and I also do it on YouTube. So if you follow me on YouTube, which I highly suggest you do, every night I go in and I tell everybody about what happened in the stock market, what happened in the bond markets, and all this other stuff. And I basically educate you on programs, credit assistance, credit repair, and everything related to mortgages. There's so much to cover. So I want to go over, you know, the jobless claims, how those came out, and it was no surprise to anybody. Here's what I would suggest you do. Follow me on YouTube. All you have to do is look up the Mortgage Update with Dan Frio, and every night I post a YouTube video. And it's basically followed by, there's over 8,000 followers or subscribers, and they're basically people in the mortgage business and the real estate business, such as realtors. I have a big following of just consumers. Every day I probably get 10 to 15 emails, faxes, texts, phone calls from people looking for assistance with their mortgage. So, but let me go over what I usually talk about on my channel. And I'll recap it here because I do it every night. So let's get a recap of the week. Everybody knows that the coronavirus is playing havoc in the markets. But a lot of this information comes out it's kind of there to capture ratings, not only on TV, but on radio and also on the internet. When you hear, you know, the Fed just dropped rates to zero. And then you get inundated with phone calls saying, hey, our mortgage rate is zero. And then you have people, kind of piling on that and spreading, you know, a little bit more misinformation on what the Federal Reserve does. So I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. But we saw middle to latter part of the week where the stock market rallied. And we're going to kind of throw this into the mix too in just a bit. What I want to do is there's all this misinformation or all these pieces. I want to bind them together and give you a feel for what's going to go on with the stock market, the housing market, and interest rates. We are inundated. I've never been this busy in my 32 years in the mortgage business of what's going on in the mortgage markets right now. And I'm going to show you or explain to you kind of what's going on, why a lot of people miss the bottom. And is the bottom in rates going to come back? Probably. But we're going to have an uptick in rates and a fairly big uptick in rates. I'll explain that as well. And it'll come back down. So if you missed the rally in the bond markets that caused interest rates to go to basically historic lows, we're going to talk about that as well. But let's start out with going over the coronavirus and, you know, the impact that it's having on over, you know, the whole country and the whole world. What's kind of getting me and kind of ticking me off a little bit is all the governors and state representatives kicking the can to the federal government. Not one of them is taking any blame at all. For example, I'm in Chicago, and just about 2 weeks ago, there was when President Trump started closing down the borders. We had a huge flux of people flying back from all over the world back home to Chicago, and O'Hare was a complete mess. And then the governor came out and he's just, you know, kind of explaining, you know, what happened and they didn't expect this and all this other stuff. And, you know, so they didn't expect it. So that's kind of okay. But now with all this happening, the federal government should have been more prepared than this. You had to take care of O'Hare Airport. That's it. You didn't have to take care of the whole country. So I'm not, I don't want to go politically one way or another. I'm just saying it's typical of the government and our representatives. Nobody takes accountability. All they do is kick the can to the next person and place the blame game. So because of the coronavirus, you're seeing a stimulus plan taking place. All right. They came out and it went from $1 trillion in support that they were, the federal government was coming in with. And then I think a $2 trillion package passed, but there was even rumblings about a $6 trillion stimulus package. Okay. Let me rewind, because I'm not real young. I'm not real old, but I'm not that young. I'm 54 years old. I've lived through the 2000 crash in our economy, and I lived through the 2009-10 subprime crash in the economy. Fortunately, unfortunately, those were economic crises. The 2000 was basically a tech bubble. The whole stock market was completely overvalued. And then it was a domino. When one thing fell, it created mayhem through the whole market and the whole world, thus crushing companies financially, okay? And that took a long time to get out of, because it was a built up of kind of straw money, I'll say, or not real money, not real valuations, okay? The same thing happened in 2007, 8, 9, 10. There wasn't the valuations placed on homes were not true. They were basically fictitious numbers, because there was so much, I'll say, kind of phony loans that everybody and their mother could buy a house. So when you do that, basically you're driving up the demand for a home. The supply is level, so you just keep inflating the value of these homes. And people were using it as a piggy bank. They would buy a house. 6 months later, the house went up 50%. They'd refinance it again. 6 months later, go 50% again. It just kept snowballing. Then when valuations came into play, some defaults happened. The whole world basically went into a recession because of the U.S. housing market. Okay, another example of overinflated numbers. This time, this is a virus. It's not that, you know, their housing market was overinflated, or that there was numbers in the economy that were overinflated. It is an epidemic that has hit us. Now, here's my thought behind the whole thing. And you saw this basically middle of the week, or latter part of this week. I'm feeling, or my thought is, when the coronavirus starts to subside, we're going to have a rapid uptick back to normal markets, back to normal life. Yes, some people are going to be behind on their mortgages and so forth, but you know you're going back to your job. There's going to be pent-up demand. So when everybody goes back to work, you're feeling, okay, now I got my paycheck. Now I got a stimulus package. I was able to skip a mortgage payment or two. I was able to skip a car payment. Okay, I'm cool. They're going to throw that on the back end of my loan, meaning I missed two payments, but they're just going to add it to the end of my loan. I'm all good. Now I get my paychecks. Now I'm starting from scratch again. Much easier to recover from that than it is to recover from, you know, half of the country losing their jobs permanently. That is tough, because then it shuts down everything. This is a forced temporary shutdown versus companies just went out of business. We're going to see big repercussions because of this. Not a lot of people might not be able to survive, but I think we're going to come back not as strong as we were, but pretty close to that. So again, as you saw in the stock market, we saw a rapid uptick in prices. I think there was a 2 or 3 day run was the biggest advance in the Dow ever. So that's what you're starting to see in this market. So when we come back, I'm going to try to tie a lot of these pieces together and advise you what you should do with your stocks, what you should do if you're a homeowner, and what you should do if you're looking to buy a home. You might be surprised at some of the answers that I come up with. So God bless. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Now, more of the Mortgage Update on AM 560. Here's your host, Dan Frio.
Welcome back to the Mortgage Update with Dan Frio. And I, of course, am Dan Frio. I apologize if the sound is a little off. I'm actually recording this from home. So like a lot of the other radio stations you listen to, the hosts are basically in their apartments or in their homes doing the shows. So that's what I'm doing. So let's get on to what I was going to discuss, stock market. What should you do? Well, the middle and latter part of the week, you saw a rebound. The biggest rebound is basically people coming in and saying, you know, I'm a little more comfortable with this. I'm going to get some stimulus packages from the government to help me make some, you know, put some food on the table. My lenders are forgiving my payments that I might miss one or two mortgage payments. I don't know if I really have much in savings, but I might have enough just to get through, you know, 2-3 weeks of not working. But with the stimulus and missing one or two mortgage payments, I'll be okay. But once I go back to work, I'll just catch up on things and kind of go from there. So my prediction is the stock market's going to go up rapidly probably in the next 2 to 3 weeks as the coronavirus subsides. I listen to the media, but I'm not going to be the doom or gloom people or person that a lot of other radio stations have or that you hear on a lot of other stations, be it radio or TV, because it gets great ratings when we're like, oh my goodness, you know, 4 more people passed today because of the virus. I'm not downplaying people passing, you know, God willing, you know, it doesn't happen. But more people have died in car accidents probably over a holiday weekend that have passed over this coronavirus. So again, I'm not trying to take this completely lightly, but I think the news media and everybody, they're getting a lot of traction off of this. So that's one piece of the puzzle. Now let's go to another section of this. I'm going to talk about the stimulus. And the government is going to print money hand over fist to kind of get the economy rolling again. Well, what happens with all of this? Well, when they pump the money into the system, eventually it's going to create inflation. Okay? Inflation most likely a couple of years from now is going to go rampant because you can't just pump $2 trillion into the economy and not have an effect. And that with a good effect, there's always side effects. So that kind of makes me a little fearful. So if you're out there and you have an adjustable mortgage or credit card debt, other things like that, you know, try to get out of that in the next year or two, just because this is going to have an impact eventually. All right. So now here's what's happening in my side of the world, mortgages and housing and looping it all together. So you currently have a home. What should you do? Look to try to refinance. Okay. And I'm biased because I'm in the business and I've been doing it for 32 years. But here's what I'm going to advise you. Call me and we're going to go over all your options. Okay. Right now, some mortgage companies are not yet allowing you to skip a mortgage payment or two. Okay. Some of the news is coming out right now saying that, you know, a lot of lenders are allowing you to skip one or two mortgage payments, but it's a work in progress. So just for kicks, I called a couple mortgage places and said I had a mortgage with them. You know, what do I need to do to be able to skip 2 or 3 payments? And it was kind of like deja vu, and I hate to say it that way. What happened back in 2000, like 7, 8, 9, when I always say the world ended, a lot of lenders did this, and you might have been in this predicament at the time. You were really struggling to make your house payment. So you called your lender saying, you know, what can I do? I want a modification. That was the big thing back in those days. I want to modify my loan. Okay. Probably a third of people got their modification completed. And of the third that got it completed, probably a fraction of those got a good deal. So here's what happened at that time. most of the time they would keep losing your paperwork until you got to the point where, you know, you were so frustrated you, one, gave up, or two, they finally came back and said, we're not going to grant you the modification. We're just going to go ahead and start foreclosure because you're so far past due. Okay? So that's the point I want to get at. I called several mortgage companies, and what they said is, yeah, we'll allow you to skip, you know, two or three mortgage payments because then we'll put you into a forbearance program or some other programs. They all have different terminology. But they said, when your case, you know, you're telling us that you're current, so you really can't do that. So what we need you to do is get behind, you know, a month or two, and then we can work with you. Well, because I was in the business back then, I know what happened. Probably half those people got strung along for 6 to 8 months and got foreclosed on. Of others that got, I'll say, help in a sarcastic kind of way. So here's what happened for those in most cases. Is they would take your balance, say you owe $100,000, but you were $20,000 behind. Okay? So they would throw the $20,000 at the end of the loan. You would have to come up with a one-time payment of $20,000. But to help you out, they're going to take your current balance and they're going to redo that for you. And because they have your best interest in mind, right? Okay? So you had a 4% rate on a 30-year term and you were down to 20 years left. Well, because they wanted to keep your business and they were so grateful to have you as a client, they would take your loan and they would stretch it out to a 40-year term now and raise your rate to a phenomenal 6.5% rate. Because with those terms, you got a lower payment than you're paying now. What a great deal. Yeah, right. Not only are you going to pay another 10 or 15 or 20 years on your mortgage, you also owe $20,000 at the end of this term. So when I'm talking to the lender recently and they said that, I was like, I want no part of that. They said, well, call back tomorrow because every day this is kind of changing. And that's where they left it. All right, so we were talking about those that own a house. What should you do? Basically, call me. Let's go through all your options, okay? There is no such thing as, I get this every day. Hey, Dan, what's your 30-year rate? There's no such thing as what is a generic 30-year rate. It doesn't exist, okay? There's probably 6 to 8 components that go into your mortgage rate. So we need to talk and say, you know, what do you have? What's your credit score? How much do you owe? What is your home worth? What term are you looking at? Or do you want a fixed or an adjustable? Do you have a government loan like FHA or VA? Or do you have a normal conventional loan? I get all this data. It might even behoove you at this time. It's if you have equity in your house, but you're inundated with other debt because of what's happening right now. Let's say you lived off your credit cards or you're living off your credit card right now, and you're like, you know, that those credit card rates are up in the tune of 20 to 25%. So if you run that up to 10 grand, you're never going to pay off that thing. So what if we did this? What if we consolidated your house? Say you're at 4.5. Say we get you a 4% rate. That's good. That's a check plus. Okay. So now we take those $30,000 you have in credit cards at 20% interest rates, and we throw that in the equation. We're going to say, well, why would I do that? Because I can pay off my credit card in, you know, 5-6 years, and my mortgage, I'm going to stretch it out to 30 years. Hold on a second. We'll talk about that. And then we'll talk about, you know what, are you comfortable with your payments? What kind of term can we structure you into? So let's go back to that question. A lot of people say, you know, why would I want to consolidate my credit cards into the house? Well, the first thing is you're probably running up your credit cards because you have a deficiency in what you're spending versus what you're earning. Why else would you have $20,000 or $30,000 in credit cards? So one, are you going to be able to pay those off, you know, 5-6 years? Probably not. At a 20% interest rate, if you owe $10,000 or $20,000, it would take you virtually forever. I know that's not the factual numbers. I don't have those in front of me. But let's look at it this way. You have a 25% credit card, or you can get a 4% mortgage. Which one is better? Easy math. Okay. So then what we say is let's consolidate all this together, because obviously if you have credit card debt in that magnitude, again, there's an imbalance of what you're making versus what you're spending. So most of the time when we're able to consolidate for somebody, we put everything together. And the norm that I usually see is there's about $1,000 reduction in your monthly expenses. When you add them all up, so we consolidate all your bills into one payment, one mortgage, it frees up about $1,000 to $1,200 a month in payments. Okay, so here's what we would do. I would say, you know what? Let's do this. Let's give it 6 months and let the dust settle. We just freed up $1,200 a month for you. Okay, but let's do this. Let's start taking that money. Don't prepay your mortgage just yet. Let's get a little cushion in the bank so we don't have to rely on those credit cards again at any time soon. Okay, so after about 6 months, you get back in rhythm again. Let's see where you are. Now, how much disposable income can you start applying toward that mortgage payment? So let's say, for example, things are going well. It's like, you know what, my deficiency balance was $500 a month. So now I can start affording to send $500 more a month to my mortgage payment. How quick is that going to pay off the mortgage? When I usually do an analysis of this, you'll pay off your mortgage quicker by doing that than you would if you just had your mortgage in there and continued to have all that other debt. I've done it 100 times. The math works. So I would suggest give me a call. The best way to get me is 844-775-LOAN. That's 844-775-LOAN. Or email me at dfrio, and Frio is F-R-I-O, at preferredrate.com. Okay. Now we're going to talk about those home buyers. So what I'm seeing now, I get it. You're out there and you're afraid. Am I going to have a job next week? Am I going to get a paycheck next week? I won't say maybe I won't have a job next week. Basically, you're not going to be on the job next week and getting a paycheck. Okay? But eventually you will. A lot of people have not been affected. If you're in restaurants, in the service industry, you have been. And God bless you. I hope everything works out for you. Our prayers are out for you. But a lot of people have really not been affected in a big, big way. If you're with a big company, it's an accounting firm or whatever, there might be some, you know, scraping and cutting back on some things, but you're still getting a paycheck. Or you have enough time accumulated, you can get paid, you know, sick leave or vacation pay or whatever. So here's what my thoughts are on buying a home. And actually, my son's in the process of doing it right now. And would I step in and say, you know what, it's not a good time to buy it? No, because here's why. His pay hasn't been affected at all. There was pent-up supply of people waiting for spring. Usually Super Bowl, for some reason, is the day and time where the light switch goes on and everybody puts their houses up on the market. So that wasn't too long ago. So the light switch has been turned on, and a lot of homes have glutted the market. Now you have a lot of people that are saying, I'm not too sure what I'm going to do now. I might sit on the sideline. Okay? So when you have oversupply and under demand, that brings down prices on the homes. It's not good for us current homeowners. It's fantastic for you out there that are buying. Double whammy for you. You're getting a great price on the home because you probably don't have as much competition as you normally do this time of year. And you're getting some of the lowest rates ever, ever in history. You couple the two of those together, and what does it equal? Probably one of the best times ever to buy a house. So that's where I would be on the housing market of buying a home at this time. So when we come back, I'm going to bring Nico in. Nico Gramarosa is a young man on our team, and he's a millennial, and we're going to talk to him about millennials. So if you're a mom or dad out there, or you are a millennial, just thinking of buying a home, we're going to get his take on, you know, what he would do in this market. Is it a good time to buy or not? So don't go away. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Update on AM 560. Now, here's your host, Dan Frio.
Hey, welcome back to The Mortgage Update with Dan Frio, and I, of course, am Dan Frio. I apologize if the sound is a little off. I'm recording this from home. This segment of the show is going to be millennials and mortgages. So we got Nico Grammarosa. He's on the Frio team. He's kind of my right-hand person at the office. Welcome, Nico.
What's up, guys? How's everybody doing today?
So,
glad to be here.
What we want to talk about today is, here's the way I look at renting. When you write a rent check, you're paying somebody rent, but in a roundabout way, the way you got to think about it is you're paying somebody's mortgage on the building that you're in. So, you're 27, right?
27? Yes, sir, 27.
A lot of your peers, I know you've done several of your friends, you did their mortgages. What's the reluctancy with the others that are paying rent? Because I know you live downtown, the rent can't be cheap.
No, not at all, not at all. Rent's way more expensive than paying a mortgage.
So what would hinder somebody or stop a lot of your, we'll just talk to your friends.
Yeah.
What would stop your friends from buying a house? What's the probably two or three things that are like, I can't do it?
I think the first one is everyone thinks you need 20% down, which is just not true. I think the second one would be just responsibility, leaving their parents, leaving the nest,
yeah.
Maybe having to do the dishes themselves now. You know, I would think that. And then I also just don't think millennials understand how your home, you can use it as almost like a savings account, you know,
right,
in case something goes wrong. So I think that's probably the biggest deterrence for millennials not buying right now.
The tough thing is, and we see a lot of young people buying homes, and it blows my mind how much rent is.
It's rent is crazy. When I'm out in the downtown and people are telling me they're paying 25, even $3,000 for rent,
right.
I'm like, do you know how much of a home you can get?
I mean, you're talking $400,000 probably in a house. And you don't need that big a house most of the time. You know, you can get a nice home and probably have a $2,000 house payment.
Yep.
So let's get through the misconceptions of things. The first thing is, it might not be the credit, but do you see a lot of people with credit? Most of your friends have like unbelievable credit.
Yeah, I mean, I would think most of the younger kids nowadays, they still have good credit.
Okay.
The only thing that might be holding them back is that's those student debts.
Yeah. That's a whole another bubble
that
at some point it's gonna burst.
Yep, for sure.
I mean, I think between that and healthcare, that's what's killing our whole economy.
Yeah, you know, it's horrible. People go out and they, you know, go to school and do what they're supposed to do, and they get all this debt though, and then they can't buy a home, and they're like, Nico, I did everything I was told to, and now they can't because there was no one telling them, you know, hey, this is going to be on your debt, you know, so.
And then it's hard to, you're spending $2,000-$3,000 a month on rent.
And it's just going into an empty pile of nothing.
Well, and then you have your student loan debt. How do you save? So you work here, you know the business inside and out. Talk about the down payment that's needed to buy a house. And it's probably going to shock a lot of people.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we have programs out there right now that you need only 3% down. And that's a conventional loan. So that means your MI will drop off after 20% is paid. So you got 3%, and then there's FHA loans as well, 3.5% down. So the misconception of the 20% down is super old school, and people need to get that out of their heads.
I think a lot of parents, you know, try to advise their kids, and they're like, well, yeah, when we bought it, we had 20% down, and they think that's still in play when it's not. So, you know, first-time homebuyers, you can get away with 3% down. Nico said PMI. Now, that sometimes that shocks people. They're like, and you might hear from your parents, or you're a parent, you might be like, I don't want my kid paying PMI. It's not so bad because it's unless you have 20% down, you pay PMI. My son had enough. He's buying a house. He had enough to put 20% down. But I said to him, why don't you leverage that extra money that you would have put down for other things possibly? You know, the stock market's getting killed right now. But on stocks, you normally yield about a 6 to 8 to 10% return. So if you can get a mortgage rate at 3 or 4, leverage the money, put the rest of the money out in the market where you're gaining 8. So you borrowed at 3 or 4, you're earning 8. It's a win. And you're also getting into a house. Many times you can get a house payment that's lower than you're paying in rent anyways. So if the down payment piece of the puzzle is what's holding you back, don't let it hold you back.
Yeah, so I would say real quick, just, you know, my cousin and I, we rented together for 2 years in Chicago, and then we bought a year and a half ago. So the mortgage payment right now is less than what we were paying before, like by $200-$300.
And most people don't get it, and then you get tax benefits, right? And you get appreciation.
Yep.
So you're paying, when you pay your rent, you're paying somebody else's mortgage. I would love to own all the real estate out there and have every month people paying, sending me checks in to pay all the mortgages. And then I just sit back and say, okay, I'm getting the appreciation, the tax benefits, and everything else of the house. And you know, 10 years from now, I'm a multi-gazillionaire, and everybody else has nothing.
Yes, yeah, sign
they
me
just
up.
Just sent all that money to somewhere else.
Sign
so,
me up.
Anything else you can think of with,
you know, also,
misconceptions?
I would say, too, people, you know, a lot of people that think the transaction is going to cost them a lot of money. Not necessarily they always think you need 20% down, but the cash to close.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll give you an example. Maybe last year we did a house, maybe like $175 purchase price. They had to bring less than $5,000 to the closing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a real thing. $5,000 to get your own home to start building wealth for yourself is crazy. I mean, think how much you're paying more than $5,000 a year in rent. That's for sure.
Easy.
So, I mean, think about that. You can get into a home, start building wealth for the same price of your rent.
Well, here's how I look at it, too. So some people, they'll say, well, in Illinois, you don't really have much appreciation. Okay, so let's say you have none, zero appreciation, all right? You buy a house for $200,000, okay? Just, I know this math isn't going to be precise, but you've stayed there for 15 years, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's half of the mortgage term. So you bought $200,000 and you borrowed, let's say, just to make it simple, you borrowed $200,000. So after 15 years, and again, this isn't precise, but just bear with me on this one. You owe $100,000 on that house. You had no appreciation. The house is still worth $200,000. You owe $100,000. You got $100,000 in equity. Even though the house didn't budge.
Real quick, just for the millennials, because sometimes when I say equity, because most, I swear, when I'm out at the bars or something, they don't really understand what equity is.
Got it. So the value of something. So if you had, let's say your iPhone right now, you have an iPhone and you got a great deal on it and you bought it for $1,000, but you could sell it to somebody for $2,000. The $1,000 spread there that you can, the money you can make on it is basically equity. So how much the difference of between what you owe and the value of that product? It doesn't matter what the product is, a car, you get a great deal on a car. You know, and then you can sell it. Let's say your dad sold you his car, and it was he's like, here, just take it. Give me $1,000. You take it, and now that somebody, one of your friends, wants to buy it, and they're like, I'll give you $3,000 for it. Mm-hmm. Well, the $2,000 spread that you made is equity.
It's profits.
So that's basically what it is. So again, if the house doesn't move in value, period, nothing. After 10 or 15 years, say you lived there for 30 years, now you have that house and you don't owe anything on it because you paid it off. It's still worth $200,000. I see people that have rented somewhere for 10, 15, 20 years, and they got nothing. If I'm the landlord, I am high-fiving my wife every month they make my mortgage payment.
You almost can look at it as like a savings account in a way, right?
Seriously.
It's something to have on the back burner in case something goes wrong, right? You know, if hospital bills come up or sending your kid to college, you can access your equity that you've been paying for years in your own home instead of the guys that you were renting from.
Right. So, Nico, how do they get a hold of you? You're a millennial. You need a mortgage. Call in. Nico will take care of you, I promise. He is our millennial mortgage guy.
Reach out to us, guys, anytime, 844-775-LOAN. That's 844-775-5626. Or nico.gramarosa@preferredrate.com. Don't worry, guys. I'll spell that last name for you. It's going to be nico.gramarosa. And you can find me on all social media platforms, just Nico Gramarosa.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it, Nico. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
This is the Mortgage Update on AM 560. Once again, here's your host, Dan Frio.
Welcome back to the Mortgage Update with Dan Frio, and I, of course, am Dan Frio. I apologize if the sound is a little off. I'm actually recording this from home. Now it's time for the credit hack of the week. And basically, I'm going to go over the top five pieces of your credit. And of those, how much of a weighted average does that piece have? And I'll explain what exactly it is. Because so many times it's like, well, your utilization rate's too high. Or that length of credit is too long. All these other things. So let's go over the top one. Is about 35% of your score, and that's your payment history. Okay, your payment history. How do you pay? Is everything on time? Do you have some late pays? Are they 2 months behind? Are you in collections? That's what that means, your payment history. How are you paying those, and are the payments being on time? All right, the next piece of the puzzle, which is 30% of your FICO score, and your FICO score is the main credit score system that all lenders use, is the amount of debt that you have. Okay, that's where we call it in the business your utilization rate. Okay, here's what I mean by that. It's just basic math. The lower your utilization rate, the higher your credit score. Okay, utilization rate means this. You take the amount you owe divided by the high credit limit of that account. Okay, so let's say, for example, you have a Visa card with a $1,000 high credit limit. Okay, but on that account, you owe $1,000. So $1,000 divided by $1,000 is 100%. So you have 100% utilization. So let's say now you owe $500 on the $1,000 account. Well, your utilization rate is 50%. So I think you get where I'm going with that. Where you want to be, the sweet spot is 30% and or below. That's where you want to be to pick up the most points when you're trying to get a better credit score. All right? The next thing is your credit history. This is tough because you really don't have, you can't mess with it because you can't go back in time and apply for a credit card. That makes up 15% of your credit scores. So something to do also in this piece of the puzzle, don't close any accounts because it'll stop your ratings. So try to, even those parents out there, if you have kids in college, maybe get them a credit card and get them a $100 limit. That's it. But at least it gets the credit ticking, okay, and starts to allow them to build credit over time. So that's number three. So let's get on to number four. Inquiries. So people inquiring about your credit. So that makes up 10% of your score. But let me give you some advice here. A lot of people that will call or email will say, you know, I don't really want you to pull my credit because it's going to affect my credit scores, right? Yeah. But probably not as much as you think it would happen. But what happens though when you're buying a house or a car? You can have multiple credit pools. Let's say you can have 3, 4, 5 credit pools as long as it's a mortgage company or a car company. So don't fear. Let's say, for example, you called your lender, local lender, and you're trying to get a mortgage through them. And then you hear my radio show, and you're like, well, let's give Dan a shot. So you call me, and then I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to pull your credit so I can figure out what I can do. No. Don't do that. Because somebody pulled my credit the other day, and you're gonna plummet my credit scores. Nope. My credit scores that I'll get on you will be identical to what the other place pulled, unless one of your creditors updated one of the accounts. So if nothing happened, my credit pool will not affect your credit score by even a point. So don't be worried. Same thing with a car. The car companies are crazy. I've seen people when they're out looking for a car, there may be 20 inquiries when they're looking for a car. And I don't know how that happens. people don't go to 20 different places. So whatever. And the final one is the type of credit, and that's 10% of your scores. What you want to avoid is payday loans. That's probably one of the biggest things that you want to avoid, because when you get to that part, there's coding or algorithms in the system that says, if you're going for a payday loan, something's wrong. Because I've seen, I just refinanced somebody that had a payday loan, and I think the yield or the rate on that loan, I might, don't hold me up against a wall on this one, it was like 220%. Now, how that's legal, I do not know. But I know it blew my mind when I saw it, because I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? It is, how can somebody, first of all, how can somebody do that to another person? But how can a company get away with that? So that's the most frustrating part about this. So those are the top five areas to focus on when you're trying to improve your credit scores. So thank you. I want to thank everybody so much for tuning in this week. Sorry if the audio is a little bit off. I'm doing this out of my house this week. So if you need any help, please don't forget to reach out to me. I'd love to help out in any way that I can. My name is, let me give you a recap. So for those who don't know who I am, my name is Dan Frio. I do the Mortgage Update every night on WYLO Radio. You can also find me on the Mortgage Update with Dan Frio on YouTube. I have over 8,000 subscribers. I have almost 500,000 views, and I get comments every day. I probably pick up 20 or 30 YouTube clients a day. But go there. I go over everything and anything with you in regards to down payment assistance, how to fix your credit, is an FHA loan a good loan? Should you go FHA or VA? What's the best down payment, the minimum down payment program if you're a first-time home buyer? I go through all of this stuff with you. So what I'm asking people to do right now, and this is getting big traction on YouTube, is if you're in the process of getting a mortgage right now because you're buying a home, be wary. Here's why. In the past 2 weeks, I've had several phone calls. One's too much, but I've had several phone calls where the client was at the table signing the papers, and the lender finally walked in and said, we can't fund this loan. And they're like, what do you mean you can't fund a loan? Our warehouse lines just got tied up, so we are not funding loans today. We might not be funding loans tomorrow. We might not be funding loans until this coronavirus is over with. That's tough. So if you're in the process of buying a house, reach out to me. Let me see what you're getting. Probably, I would say 8 out of 10 times that I get what's called a loan estimate. And a loan estimate, what that is when you're applying for a loan, legally, your lender has to issue you what's called a loan estimate. And it's a 3-page document, and it goes over your rate and your fees. And I'll repeat that, and your fees. Don't be wowed. You want a good rate, but don't be wowed over the rate alone. I've seen in the last 2 weeks where people are getting good rates, normal rates, but they're paying 1, 2, 2.5 points to get that rate. What a point is, 1 point equals 1% of your loan amount. I've had several loans come in, loan estimates, where people were paying in probably on average between $5,000 and $7,000 in points. That's absurd. Okay, so send me your loan estimate. Let me review it. Probably 8 out of 10 times I am beating rate or fees or both. Lower rate and lower fees. Okay? So, and if you have a mortgage out there and it's over 4%, here's what I'm asking people to do. Send me your mortgage statement. Write on there what you think your credit score is, and I'll get back with you probably within an hour on telling you what I can or can't do. Okay? I need you to email those to me at dfrio, which is D for Dan. Frio is F-R-I-O at preferredrate.com. Or if you want to talk to somebody personally, call in. I'd love to talk with you. The number is 844-775-LOAN. That's 844-775-LOAN. God bless, guys. Thank you. Be safe. Be healthy. I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mortgage Update with Dan Frio. For over 30 years, Dan Frio has mastered the real estate market as one of the country's premier mortgage advisors. Call Dan today at 844-775-LOAN. That's 844-775-5626. Or online at thefrioteam.com.
This is Dan Frio with the Mortgage Update. I want to thank those sponsors out there. Dottie Dose with Echo Home Inspections, Inc., Gary Hall of RE/MAX Central, AD Supplies, Pat Frio, Stort Ramirez with eSignature Realty, Tom Mirabali, your independent insurance provider with Blue Cross Blue Shield, Pat Noon of PJN Tax Solutions Group, CreditScoresAndMore.com, and Universal Masonry Group, Joe Tribuzio. Thank you so much for making this possible. Also, to hear any of my shows or past shows or find any of my sponsors, you can go to themortgageupdate.net. That's themortgageupdate.net. God bless.